So happy what Christmas? Happy New Year!
Is happy this New first Year! Time? And
yeah,
all
this
that
is our comeback, right?
All that stuff. Yeah, this is our comeback episode, kind of. What was obviously the last thing we did was episode. Oh wait, no, we did the opener episode.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah, and that ended
that was
up being
a special bonus thing. Yeah,
pretty long for what it was.
I know. We can't shut up about Rick and Morty. God.
We just can't shut up about Rick and Morty, specifically. Yeah.
Specifically.
And that's why we're here, and that's why you want to listen to us. So welcome to Wubba Lubba Pod Pod. I'm Josh.
I'm Alex. And this is our podcast. And we just finished the entire season one of Rick and Morty. So if you haven't caught up, make sure to do that because we're about to get into season two, bitch!
Damn right. Wubba Lubba Pod Pod, the journey of two casual Rick and Morty fans doing a deep dive so you don't have to. I'm trying to make that our thing. That's going to be like our tagline.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, unless you can think of a better one. I'm still working on it.
No, I can't.
Okay. Cool. Here we are. As usual, we're going to give you a scene-by-scene recap of an episode. Particularly today, it's going to be Season 2, Episode 1 of Rick and Morty, A Rickle in Time. We're going to give you some analysis as we go and some character lore tracking. And we're going to talk about some fan theories at the end. It's going to be great.
So great. Oh
so great. Oh, yeah.
So how are you, Josh?
I'm okay. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. I had a very nice Sunday. I did some exercise. I played some Call of Duty. And yeah, it was chill.
What?
It was nice.
Good. Yeah. Oh, it's super chill up here too. It's like 2 degrees outside chill.
Oh, yeah.
And I also got a little exercise. I rolled out of bed. I did 20 push-ups, not all at once, but also some 20-second planks, three sets of those. Trying to build my core strength here. Yeah.
Look at us. New year, new us.
New year, new me. New you, new us. Oh, yeah. Wait, there's an us? Weird. There's a podcast us. That's not. Yeah. That's indisputable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Look at this. We got two squares on a screen of our faces next to each other. That's...
Oh,
literally us. Yeah, duh, gosh. Aww. Jeez. Merry Christmas.
What is happening?
Turn your head. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
What is my purpose?
You pass butter.
Oh my god.
Glenn's bleeding to death.
I am totally fine.
The squirrel's
bleeding. Oh my god.
Oh jeez, I'm so down with my parents' divorced dog.
What is my purpose?
God exists, it's
So, on our cold open, we zoom in on Morty, and he's dustbustering Jerry's nipples and his armpits, and, you know, generally the rest of his body also. I just needed to point out, there was definitely a moment he was vacuuming his dad's nipples. Childhood trauma much? Okay. Summer nitpicks his cleaning methodology and flexes on him that maybe Rick would start to favor her as his new sidekick, poking at Morty's insecurities. You know, this is a very accurate older and younger sibling relationship, at least for a dysfunctional home. Yeah. I should know. Rick steps out belching about how much he doesn't give a fuck about anything, so shut up and put a shirt on your dumb dad and let's get time started again. And back inside, Rick informs them that the world's time will be fine, but theirs will be unstable, so don't be a pussy about it. Oh, by the way, don't touch your parents or we could shatter into countless theoretical shards. And away we go!
We go!
Boop!
Wait, what?
Oh, God!
He just drops that bomb on them with no time to process.
Right, and I think he did that on purpose.
Oh, of course.
So Jerry and Beth stomp in all pissed off, but now confused that the house looked trashed on their way in. Rick takes care of that with some good old-fashioned gaslighting.
Yeah.
They get over it quickly and move in to hug them. But they all back away, making Beth and Jerry suspicious, more so than they already were. Rick then shamelessly wraps $500 in unmarked monies, if you will. The price of my hat, if you recall. Wraps it in a roll and sets it on the floor for them to go get some ice cream and just kind of kicks it towards them, which makes them even more suspicious, like you fucking should be. But it works. You don't ask too many questions when somebody kicks $500 at you.
No, you don't.
And Jerry's like, this had better not be a bribe. I'm like, okay. You're still taking it, though, Jerry. So.
Yeah.
Beth notices Jerry's shirt is on backwards. And Rick and Morty and Summer are worried Jerry might suspect the truth for a moment, but he pretends to like it that way. And they all breathe a collective sigh of relief. Rick calls Jerry the red grin grumbled of pretending he knows what's going on. Morty and Summer laugh nervously at that, to which Rick drives his point home that they're not any better than him. Don't be sheep. Think for yourselves.
Yeah.
So
because he made that up.
Yeah.
So that's why.
You guys really are your father's children. Yeah, something I've been wanting to pay a little more attention to as I rewatch the series starts here in this episode. If there's ever a time after last episode that we don't see the seam in the ground around the house from where the house was detached and sent to another dimension for the entire evening. I read somewhere briefly, I didn't write it down, unfortunately. I read somewhere that this does happen sporadically in a couple of different episodes. And that's part of the fan theory that supports the idea that we're not always following Rick C-137 and Morty Prime.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep my eyes out and pay attention to when that happens because I can't recall. So
can you see the line in this episode?
In every episode, either the establishing shot or some sort of establishing shot, they show the house from a wide shot and you can see the seam from where the it goes through the driveway and through the yard and around the house. And Beth and Jerry never say anything about that. And I want to know how they managed to fix all the plumbing and everything. Like,
that's true.
That would take some major construction work that...
Oh, so expensive.
Even if Rick is a genius, and he is, that's just a lot of grunt work to like dig down there and fix all of those pipes.
True.
Yeah. Maybe he had some Meeseeks to it or something. Whatever.
Oh, you know what? Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, so opening credits. And then so Morty and Summer start fighting over whose job it was to put the mattress under Mr. Benson. Oh my God, that's right. The neighbor, right? It's like their front, like across the street neighbor.
Yep. In the very first shot.
Right, because he froze as he was falling from the ladder, I think. Uh-huh. So Rick interjects only to side with Morty, saying that he remembers the conversation where they had agreed that Summer was the one to put the mattress under Mr. Benson. and suddenly, like a ghost version of Morty and Summer start fighting in like Ghost Summer pushes Ghost Morty, but not the real Morty. Oh, wait, am I skipping stuff? Fuck.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
I think I skipped a little
bit. Rick confirms that it was Summer's job to put the mattress under Mr. Benson. Morty gets some much-deserved revenge against Summer's earlier cruelty as he throws her words back at her. He's like, you really dropped the ball, Summer. And this pisses her off, but she's uncertain, apparently. We know this because of later events. She's uncertain about whether or not to shove Morty, causing it both to happen and not happen. And this splits.
This is when it splits.
This starts to split their unstable time into two different hypothetical realities. And so Rick has to run to the garage to consult some equipment to confirm his suspicions.
Yeah.
Whatever you skipped, it wasn't that much.
No, okay. So, there's two versions of everything with like a slight difference in one version. Like, for example, in one of them, Summer is on the right side of Rick and Morty is on the left side. And on the other version, it's like opposite, right? But
most importantly, Alex, there's two dots. There's two dots.
Fucking two dots, man.
There should only be one dot.
God damn it.
Damn it. Yes, that is correct.
So I guess Summer is the one who volunteers to help Grandpa in one version, and then Morty is the one who volunteers to help on another version. Rick accuses both of them of making them uncertain. And Rick says our time is fractured due to some how create a feedback loop of uncertainty that split our reality into two equally possible impossibilities. Science, 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 right?
Yeah. And here's a line that I think was very probably written by Justin Roiland. He says, we're exactly like a man capable of sustaining a platonic relationship with an attractive female coworker. Completely hypothetical. Which is cringy as fuck. But if you grew up in the 90s or before, it's pretty much infallible due to, you know, all the rampant casual misogyny at the time. But I think that's getting better slowly, more and more in modern times. But, I mean, Justin Roiland, I wouldn't really expect much better from him. I mean, I've heard he, before even all of his nonsense with the lawsuit around
the drama,
false imprisoning of his ex-girlfriend, whether or not it actually happened. Apparently, this is just fact. He publicly proclaimed that he doesn't understand why we can't all just admit that 16-year-olds are hot. So, I wouldn't expect anything less out of him. Now, there is something to be said for wanting to bring the discussion of having inappropriate attractions to underage people onto the table and what to do with those feelings so you don't become a pedophile. But I don't think he was framing it that way, even if that was his intention. Maybe just stop.
Maybe stop.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Back to the show. Rick opens the garage door to show that they're in some sort of limbo that looks like outer space, but, you know, filled with cats floating around.
Cats everywhere, man. I'm like, this is great.
Yeah, this is heaven. I want to go to that limbo. Yeah. This is great, but, you know, the cats, I don't know why they were all alive. Half of them should have been dead, because they're Schrodinger's cats.
Oh.
Not because they're in space, because they're Schrodinger's cats. Are you familiar with Schrodinger's cats?
Yes, but will you remind us for anybody who doesn't know?
I'm so glad you asked. So I just punched a couple things into Google here. Here's what Google said. From asking the question, what does Schrodinger's cat have to do with quantum physics? Well, Google says, fundamentally, the Schrodinger's cat experiment asks how long quantum superpositions last and when or whether they collapse. It's kind of a difficult thing to really wrap your head around. Some wordy shit right there. But if that helps, great. Let's go on to what is the Schrodinger's theorem? Schrodinger's theorem is actually entitled Schrodinger's Cat. Quantum theory is very strange, and it says that an object like a particle or an atom that adheres to quantum rules doesn't have a reality that can be pinned down until it is measured. And there's lots of videos on YouTube that you can watch that play out that and illustrate that theory for you, and it's creepy. It's super fucking creepy. Like, the particles react differently based on whether you're watching them or not. If you're not watching them, where they land is different than when you are watching them. So obviously they can't watch them to see how they get to where they land when you're not watching them, but they can see where they're striking. And it's just fucking creepy. Like, what is reality? Not even reality knows. So, So my layman understanding, which is shaky at best, of what this is saying is that, or at least what I'm getting out of it, is this is where we get the multiverse theory. Essentially, the idea is that all of these superpositions that can happen do happen, and that is what causes infinite branching of dimensional realities, giving this entire show its main premise.
Right, okay.
So, that being said, any quantum physicist will tell you, if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't understand quantum physics. And I
man.
Like, this is some layman pedestrian shit, and even that makes me go, huh? What? I don't get it. So, I think that means that I understand quantum physics.
That's what I was going to say. So, does that mean we understand it because we don't?
That is my assessment as well. Thank you. Great minds. They think alike.
Yeah.
Look at us. Look at us go. Anyway.
Yeah.
Morty
so
freaks.
Wait. So the cat is in a box, but you don't see the cat. So it both is and isn't in the box.
Schrodinger's cat theory is that you cannot know until you open the box.
Put the box.
Whether or not the cat is alive or dead.
Okay.
Yeah. We know there's a cat in the box. We don't know if it's dead or alive.
My God.
Not
poor
whether
cat.
Or not it's in the box at all.
Okay.
I don't know how we know that there's a cat in the box. And that's just a thought experiment. And they threw
that. There is no actual cat in any box. Cats aren't being harmed with this theory.
Correct. Yeah. it's all hypothetical hogwash. And I don't even get it. It's just something to think about and spin in circles about and go, I don't get it.
Fun.
And it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It makes you
feel
bad
about
cats.
So these cats are floating in space. Great.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, Morty freaks out about mom and dad, which is the farthest thing from Rick's mind because they get to exist while the rest of them are trapped in a timeless oblivion. They're probably living it up in some pointless grounded story about their shitty marriage. cut to Beth and Jerry living it up in some pointless grounded story about their shitty marriage.
Driving back from Cold Stone Creamery. This episode is clearly sponsored by Cold Stone Creamery.
Clearly.
Yeah.
That was one of my questions. I was like, are they paying for...
I don't think they actually
product
were.
Product placement? I think they might have. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it was the beginning, so maybe it... Yeah, maybe, yeah. I don't know. Did they pay Panda Express?
I mean, they talk too much shit about Panda Express, so...
Yeah,
that
it's very
one's,
negative.
it's funny, because you can talk shit about any company you want and get away with it. But you just, you know, don't expect them to pay you for it. But since they never really badmouth or really make fun of Cold Stone Creamery.
No, the opposite. They're like, this
exactly.
is great.
they make Cold Stone Creamery actually kind of sound good. I kind of want to go there. I don't know if I've ever been.
So
we start off with Jerry being like, what are we going to do with our remaining $20? And Beth says, you realize they sing no matter how much you tip, right? So, if we recall, they started off
they had
with
$500. How much
At
ice
least.
Cream did they?
This isn't even counting pocket change or, you know, whatever they had on them. Just bare minimum, $500. He tipped at least $450. I don't know how much it costs for an ice cream cone. I'm guessing 10. So let's just say, you know, $15 a cone just to be safe, which that sounds excessive to me, but also nothing surprises me anymore.
No.
So, yeah, that's Damn. Excessive. $460, $450 to tip. I didn't know that they sing if you tip them anywhere.
Oh, I didn't know either.
Yeah. Well, that's what Beth is saying. You realize they sing no matter how much you tip them, right?
Yeah.
So I guess...
If this is how Jerry tips, I want to serve Jerry.
Right?
You know what I'm saying?
No, Jerry might be pretty... He's a himbo, definitely.
Yeah.
But I think he'd be a fun guy to hang out with.
Sure.
I don't think he's a bad dude. Well, okay, no, that's not true. Mm. Never mind. Forget I said that. I want that stricken from the record. I just remembered lots of things that actually do make him a bad dude. Never mind.
Yeah.
Don't want to get into it now. So, yeah.
Oh, they is this when they hit the deer?
Yeah. Then they hit a deer.
Yeah. Jerry runs over it. Jerry's freaking out. Beth is keeping calm and collected. She approaches the deer and realizes that it's still alive. And Jerry immediately suggests to like put it out, get a rock and put it out of his misery, basically. Beth is like, no. Like we can save the deer. Hold on. I'm trying to interpret my notes.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. And Jerry, before they get out of the car, hands his cone to Beth. And he's like, if we call the car, or no, he takes her ice cream cone, whatever. And he's like, if we call the cops, you have to say that you were driving. This is rum raisin.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know that rum raisin was an ice cream flavor until I saw this episode. And I was like, what? That's a thing? And there's real rum in it. But it's not nearly enough to actually like show up on a breathalyzer. It's a tiny little bit, just to give it a tiny little bit of rum flavor, which why in God's name would you want that? I don't get it.
I don't know.
Other than they both start with an R.
I have no idea.
Anyway, Jerry's a tit. Beth is mad that she can't save the deer.
Beth is like, dude, you wouldn't be like... She tells him something and he's like, oh, I was just like, I thought that's what a man would say. Like, I wouldn't actually be able to do it.
Yeah. He offers to get a rock to smash the deer in the head with.
To kill the deer. Oh, my God. And then Jerry and Beth want to take the deer to a hospital so she can treat it. I mean, Beth wants to. Yeah.
Yeah. But then Jerry super steps in the shit by suggesting that even if they were at a hospital, what could they do? She's a horse surgeon, not a deer surgeon.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit. And her ego grabs this completely innocent and stupid, admittedly, statement and drags it through the mud, forcing the implication that maybe he meant that she didn't have the skill to work on a deer instead of a horse. And she tells him to get the deer in the car. And he meekly obliges her.
Yeah.
Because he's Jerry. And they're codependent. But we're not there yet. So.
So, la la la. Cut to.
The garage.
Rick. The garage. Rick is saying that this is why you don't freeze, guys.
Yeah, he's going on about how irresponsible it is to freeze time.
Right. Morty points out that.
Yeah, Morty's like, well, you did it so that we could clean the house. And Rick's like, there's literally no time to hold me accountable. Everything either is or isn't. And they've got approximately 4 hours to be is or else they isn't.
Exactly.
So Rick whips up his garage door opener button with the time crystal and hits it to bring them back to one dot, not two. That's too many fucking dots.
The dots. Oh,
but
my God.
It doesn't work. Morty and Summer are still too unsure of themselves and therefore standing on opposite sides of Rick and switched places in either quantum superposition. I learned that word because of this episode. Thank you. And when Rick flips out on them, he's like, we've been split for 20 minutes and your lives are already scattered to the quantum fucking wind. I just love that line.
What else? Rick explains how he's amazing and he just fixed the little remote thing. He's going to press the button and everything will go back to normal. But he starts being questioned by Summer and Morty. He shuts them up by saying that because he's amazing and that's the answer. And he clicks the button and time seems to be getting put back together for a second. But apparently because Morty and Summer are uncertain, they couldn't get put back together. So Rick starts to scold them about being uncertain. Okay. We covered that. Both realities start explaining, kind of fighting and yelling, but they're yelling about different things. So it's like chaotic.
And Rick's like, all right. I get it. Each of you want to be grandpa's favorite and is unsure of their place in the world. So he sets about to proving to them mathematically, mind you, that they are both in his eyes pieces of shit.
He brings a whiteboard. Okay. This is serious. Sit down and learn why you're both pieces of shit. Oh, man.
Family time.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's not too much different than my childhood. You know, that was always the subtext of my existence. So at least they know where they stand.
Did your parents ever bring out a whiteboard to explain to you?
No, but I wish they had. You know, at least that would have been honest. Rick, for the most part, has been pretty consistently the same this whole episode thus far in the two different split superpositions of time.
So far.
So far. And he even gets Morty and Summer switched back to their corresponding places without even knowing that he was doing it. That's how consistent he is.
Oh, nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just before he does the whiteboard thing and we cut to the vet's office.
Yeah. Where Beth and Jerry burst through the doors carrying the apparently dead deer, wounded deer. The vet's inside taking the pressure off a snake.
Yeah.
That's like, hilarious.
There's just an armband around the midsection of a fucking boa constrictor. I'm like, can you do that? Is that how that works?
Does that work? I don't know.
I doubt that that's how that works, but it's funny. It's funny to look at.
Yeah.
the poor snake.
Oh, man. Also, oh, my God, thought.
Hmm.
Do you remember there's an episode in the future with the whole snake situation? Remember the whole scene with the snakes?
Yeah.
I just thought, like, I wonder if this snake is connected to those snakes. Probably not, but that'd
snake
be hilarious.
Jazz is my jam.
My God. Oh, my so God. Good.
Anyway, yeah. You know, that's a good question. I wonder if that fits in somehow. We'll have to pay attention to that when we get to that episode.
Yeah. So Beth and the vet start arguing, yelling at each other. But Beth clearly wins, saying that let's save the measuring for when our dicks are out. It's time to save a life, damn it.
I love the vet's reaction. She's like, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's like, whoa, so intense.
Yeah.
Plot twist, the deer was shot by a hunter. Because he walks in, he's like, hey, that's my deer. He claims that the deer belongs to him, but Beth only wants to help the deer and take care of its wounds. Like, she's like, no, I'm saving this deer's life. She's like hyper-focused on this task.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she doesn't have time for this shit. She needs anesthetic and deer saline. Stat!
Is deer saline? Do you know that saline is just water?
It's salt water.
Salt water.
Yeah, so I don't think deer saline is a thing, and that's why it's funny.
It's funny.
So glad we cleared that up.
The vet says, look, I don't know what the law says about this, but I took an oath that I would let no animal come to harm, except when sterilizing a boar.
Sterilizing.
Aborting or euthanizing them, or also when eating them at almost any meal.
So a lot of exceptions there. No big deal. She still took an oath, though. Damn it.
Damn it. And she stands by it.
Yeah. Yeah. But
yeah.
The hunter calls up his lawyer, and Beth gets super aggro about it. And she's like, in your dreams, bitch!
Scalpel!
So, yeah, she's super intense in this episode, which is hilarious to watch. But I feel bad for Jerry in this scenario. And you can see that he knows what's coming the whole time. He's like, okay, Beth.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And obviously, he at some point manages to go out of his way to hire Cold Stone Creamery to pose.
I love that he did that.
As state officials.
Listen, we'll get there. It's later in the episode. But I do gotta say, this is probably the first time that I was like, damn, Jerry did something right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not very often, but.
No, it's rare.
It happens.
Sight.
I'd say a third of the time. It's actually more often than you would probably knee-jerk give him credit for, you know?
Yeah,
but
true.
My favorite part so far about this whole B-plot of the episode with Jerry and Beth and the hunter and the deer, I love that somehow the B-plot of this episode that is on the surface seemingly much more grounded in reality, but it is actually much less plausible than the A plot of Rick and Morty and Summer being stuck in a time-space anomaly oblivion. Like,
how come?
Who would call a lawyer over a deer?
Well, yeah.
For that matter, who would pick up a deer and take it to a vet's office because they hit it with the car and they just can't accept that they're not a good enough surgeon to take care of it? I'm...
And yeah, I see what you mean now.
It's really implausible. Like, Beth, even just the idea that Beth is so insecure seems really implausible. And I'm not saying that this weird limbo time splitting thing is a directly plausible event, but at least it's
like equally implausible.
It's reminiscent to real science, and their actions and motivations around it all make sense given the premise. Whereas it's ridiculous and absurd that anybody would do the things that Beth, Jerry, and the Hunter are doing. So I just think
true,
that's
man.
Great
that's
juxtaposition.
A really good point.
Like the impossible part of the episode seems the most plausible, and the reality grounded part of the episode is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Genius writing, though, if you ask
me. I love it.
For that reason alone.
I love that. Yes. Oh my God. Good job, writers. Good job.
Yeah.
Well done. Can we take a tiny break so I can get a refill on my beer?
Sure. Back in the garage, now that Rick has put Morty and Summer in their place and has thoroughly degraded them equally, he can try the time merge again, and he tells them to be sure, be like Grandpa. Morty, in only one timeline, says, "You mean drunk?" Throwing off Rick's timing. So he hits He hits the button a moment later in the second one than the first one, where in both of them he goes, "And away we go." "And away we go" in the second one. And Rick flips out in both timelines, assuming that the other timeline, Rick, has decided to kill them all because it'd be easier than merging the timelines. The difference is he would never actually do it. But he doesn't realize that none of the timelines of Rick would actually do it. Not on not on the offensive, anyway. So he quickly throws together a quantum gun using the time crystal and starts to shoot into the other dimensions, first at his own head. Luckily, he was still out of sync, because this is pretty much the only part of the episode where, not the only. This is the first part we start to see Rick out of sync with the other timelines.
Yeah, true.
And it's at this point, are there only two still, or is it four?
It's two... Or they're about to split into four.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds right. So yeah, he shoots at his own head first. Luckily, he's out of sync and he misses. Then he starts to shoot randomly around the room, luckily missing his other selves with every shot. He tells Morty and Summer to hide in the cupboards, then tells them not to, but think about hiding in the cupboards, shoots at the cupboards. Morty and Summer are in different places in each timeline for all of this. And then the time splits into four and he's just completely off the rails at this point. He's like, "Is this what you want, you sick fuck? You want to see children die?
You sick fuck."
Because it was always in the back of his head. It would be easier just to kill the other versions instead of syncing up the time. And I really wonder if that would have actually worked.
Oh, man.
You know?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, since the whole thing's impossible, probably... for my sanity, I need to think that it's impossible. Sure. Then, it's definitely possible. That's my conclusion.
Sure.
Writing a whole paper about that. It's my dissertation, actually.
Can't wait to read it.
Good. Because you have to. You do have to wait.
Okay.
It's going to be a long time. Back at the vet's office.
Are we? Okay, yes. Here. Okay. Cut to Beth. Intensely trying to save the deer, elbow deep in a thoracic cavity. This is when the hunter's lawyer walks in and he's like, doing his lawyer shit. And then
I'd like to inform you of Brad's law.
Yeah, Brad's law. He essentially tells Beth that she's like operating on venison. But then the hunter says, he's decided that all this fear and conflict has probably ruined the meat, so he's just gonna put the head on his rec room at this point. And then Jerry says that she normally works on horses. Why does he keep stop? Jerry!
Well, like, to be fair, Beth is embarrassing herself right now.
I know.
The whole situation is embarrassing, and Jerry's embarrassed. I think.
But
I'm on Jerry's side for this part.
He's just pissing Beth off more and making her more unhinged.
Yeah.
Like, just adding gas to the fire.
It wasn't a great idea to say that, but I get it.
Don't,
you know?
Say it. You can think it, just don't say it. Fuck. Yeah, so Beth is like, if you're not going to help, get the fuck out of here. Like, fuck. Beth
just shoves him across the room. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wait, but this next part, Beth pulls out the deer's intestines. Is like,
like she's making fucking balloons at a children's party. Just,
and then she screams, "I will reach into heaven and yank your screaming deer soul back."
That's where the vet's like, "Jesus."
Yes.
Which is the appropriate the response. Like,
whoa. Oh, man. Okay.
And that's then we cut back to the garage. And just before Rick resynchronizes and nearly shoots himself in the head in all four timelines, Morty, just in the nick of time, knocks him out also in all four timelines. And he picks up Rick's gun and moves it to the bench and says, whatever we do now, from now on, we need to be certain. And he's certain they're effed in the A.
Yeah.
And he is certain because he syncs up in all four of those timelines and says the same thing. But Summer, they're still in slightly different positions. Summer's like sitting in one, kneeling in the other, leaning in one, and they switch places in a couple of them. So they're still not totally certain, but they're starting to sync up.
Yeah, they're syncing up.
And then there's a quick commercial break.
Yeah, it's like a little commercial break. It's a little bit later. There's an establishing shot still of like the space and the cats and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love that that's the establishing shot.
Yeah. And we see that Morty and Summer have placed Rick inside a dog crate thing. And he's waking up, right? After being knocked out. He's waking up.
He wants out because if he dies in a cage, he loses bet. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I love that. I want to know what that bet was. And I want to know if it was with Bear Person. That's
I that would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet you'll die in a cage, Rick.
Yeah.
I'll take that bet.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, because birds in cages. Anyway.
That makes it more. I love the quote that they say, like, you try to kill yourself and. And Rick goes, only in self-defense, myself tried to kill me first. Oh, man.
Wait, fuck me? No. Fuck me.
Fuck you. Fuck me.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the other
kind of the same.
So same he like explains that they, you know, they're fractured twice as much and they have like half the time to get back into certainty, otherwise they're fucked. And then he's like, I don't expect you to understand this time fracturing problem thing, but, and then he's like, wait, I do actually expect you to understand because it's basic math, but both Summer and Morty look confused as fuck. I don't think they are understanding. And then that's when he says, can somebody let me out of here? If I die in a cage, I lose a bit.
Yep. And then he calls himself on his cell phone. He sticks the crystal in it because that solves everything, you know, except for their current situation. And he leaves a voice message for himself saying, hey, sorry, are we cool now or something? And then plays back the messages. Personally, I'd have wanted all of them to play all the way through to prove that they're all synced up. But, you know, for the sake of saving some airtime, we get the point. So Summer's like, okay, but we're still not letting you out. So Rick just disassembles the cage to let himself out in like half a second. And he's like, well, I waited till I was certain. Because, you know, that's the difference between you and me, Morty. I'm certain and you're a walking burlap sack of turds. Which seems unnecessarily verbally abusive, but perhaps there's a method to his madness.
Perhaps.
He needs to create an air of normalcy in order to shore up Morty's confidence in himself.
Maybe.
Yeah. No. Anyway, introducing the testicle time dude who floats in a bubble. And
I called him testicle time monster.
There we go. I recently learned that this guy is voiced by Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele.
No way!
Yeah.
And that's why he's so funny, bro.
Yeah. And why his voice sounded so familiar, but I could never pin down from where.
Yeah, there
you go. And now I can't unhear it. I can see his face as I'm watching it, because I've watched so much Key and Peele now. Nice. And I can just imagine him no matter what he's saying now. And it actually makes this episode 10 times funnier because now I can visualize him saying these things in real life. And he just goes apeshit on them in an endearing way because, you know, they broke their time twice. And their dumbass monkey ass and ass asses tried to put it back together with a time crystal. Well, shut up and put these collars on. Can't move time while you're in your third dimension, you idiots.
Yeah.
One of the four Ricks refuses, and there's lots of chaos because all the Mortys and Summers are saying slightly different things, causing Time Testicle Key to stress out because he can hear and see all four timelines at the same time. And he's like, y'all just negligent. And over all the hubbub, he's like, that's because you're being obstinate. So Fourth Rick finally agrees to put the necklace on, and they all merge back together finally. And Rick wants to know how long they have to wear them, and Time Testicle Key is like, well, I suppose that would be forever because you're going to time jail for stealing a time crystal. And this is where he pulls out his limp slug of a gun, just limp slug creature, points it at them.
I called it the flaccid dick worm.
And Summer berates Rick for stealing a time crystal from the testicle monsters. Rick laments that they don't exactly sell them at Costco, but there's a larger lesson to be learned here. Get him! But he staves them off by threatening them with the slug and that it can turn them into a third trimester fetus from 30 yards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then cut to Beth, still trying to save the deer. She's sweating bullets. Everybody is like just standing right next to her, like looking at what she's doing and like commenting and like having opinions. And then until finally Jerry walks in with two guys claiming that they're from the Servine Institute of Elk, Moose, Deer, and Stag. And they can take the deer to a helicopter and fly it to wherever the top deer surgeon is.
Yep.
So Beth is like, okay, great, let's do that. Yay, solutions. So they put the deer in the van. But the asshole lawyer says that there's one more thing, actually. According to the state's veterinary statute, this animal can't be transferred until the current attending physician verbally confirms their inability to provide adequate care. And then the hunter goes, you heard the man, horse doctor. You have to say you couldn't hack it. Fuck. And then Jerry's like next to Beth. Just like, we did it.
We did it.
Beth is just like fuming.
Jerry is so fucking terrified of Beth's emotions.
I know he is.
I've been in that kind of a relationship and it's not fun. Yeah.
No,
that's,
it's not.
That's
it's
a trauma response.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary.
Back to the garage. Time Testicle Key is on the phone with someone explaining that he's on Earth. No, past the dinosaurs. If you get to the dolphin people, you've gone too far.
Does that imply that in the future there's going to be dolphin people?
Yeah, we're going to go extinct and the dolphins take over the world, basically.
Oh, right, okay. Makes sense.
Which,
because they're intelligent, right?
Yeah. I think elephants, dolphins, and there's a couple other ones that are
super smart.
Super smart, getting near close to human level intelligence. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Time Testicle Key is just full of golden quotes here. He's like, you know what they do to third dimensional beings in time prison? Same thing they do in every other prison, only forever.
Forever.
So Morty's like, why are you doing this? And he's like, you think I want to be an omniscient, immortal being transcending time and space my whole life? I got ambitions. Turning you in is my ticket up. Oh, I want to know, where the fuck is up from there? Obviously,
right?
Obviously, that's the joke. But damn, like, what if even God is disappointed with his job or, you know, his place in?
He's like, when am I going to get promoted? Promoted to what?
Yeah. I mean, maybe he just wants a normal life. Maybe that's the story there. Because, I mean, he doesn't look like he's having a good time. He's wearing tattered rags.
That's true.
And he's just upset because he has to go around. He's basically a traveling repairman for time.
Yeah.
Forever. And that doesn't sound fun.
No.
But then again, that's what Doctor Who is entirely based on. Except he's not really repairman for time so much as he's fixing all the things that he fucked up about time. And okay, and things that other people fucked up about time. But this isn't about Doctor Who. I don't know.
Okay.
So
Rick then says, what if I told you there's a huge ticket up right behind you? As he like grabs a wrench and hides it behind him. Mm-hmm. And Testicle Monster is like, do you think I'm stupid? Like, I'm not that stupid. But then Rick uses like kind of logics himself into making him actually turn around. He's like, there's 100% time. There's like
probability.
Probability that you are going to turn around, right? So then Testicle Time Monster is like, oh yeah, okay, I can't argue with that. He turns around, Rick attacks him with the wrench, and he tries to get gets his gun.
That's
gun.
Such dumb cartoon logic. I cannot argue that. That's like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck kind of shit right there.
Yeah, it was a little cartoon moment. But it is a dumb cartoon. He grabs the gun. The gun seems to be alive. Starts to be like, moving and stuff. And Rick drops it saying like, oh, gross and weird.
Weird and gross. Gross and weird. Yeah.
And the gun starts like hopping away. And the Testicle Time Monster yells, Chris! As he gets run over by a car.
My gun! You killed my gun!
Oh my God. The gun's name was Chris.
It was Chris. Which is funny and also heartbreaking all at the same time.
Oh my god.
His gun. Oh. He loved it.
Chris probably had family, man.
Right? And it was him. They were each other's family.
Oh, shit. They only had each other.
And then Rick has a genius idea for them all to take off their collars and be uncertain about things. And as they break their time into countless theoretical shards, did I say countless? I meant 32. They also take turns kicking Time Testicle Monster's ass until he's a sad, deflated scrotum flattened against the workbench and the floor. And now Rick has to fix the collars real quick, like, and Morty worries that he has to fix, you've got to fix 32 sets of collars. Oh my God, gosh. And Rick assures him it's really only three, while the other 31 versions of him also have to fix three. So, and he knows how to be decisive, you know, except in what kind of a screwdriver to ask for. Into 64 timelines.
It was
now
between the Phillips and the flathead.
Oops.
That's what did it, man.
A really good, shit moment.
Yeah.
One of the best I've seen in a long time, actually.
So cut to Beth and Jerry in the car. You know, Beth is like still kind of upset. Jerry starts like sort of apologizing and saying like, oh, I know this was my fault that we hit the deer. And I know that you wanted to be the one to save it. Beth is like, how petty would I be, would I have to be if I care less about an animal's life than my own ego? And then Jerry is like, well, you have to be pretty petty, but you still be the woman that I married. Kind of romantic. Okay.
A little bit romantic.
And then,
not sure I care then, for the message at the end of the day, but still sounded like the right thing to say.
Yeah. And then they kind of like start going a different way, I guess, because Beth is like, wait, where are we going? And Jerry's like, we have one more stop. And damn, this is when Jerry does the thing.
It's a good thing.
They stop in the middle of a forest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two guys. the two guys that took the deer before, they take the deer out of the truck, of the van, and they start prepping some lights. And Beth is like, what is happening? Where's the helicopter? Jerry explains there is no helicopter and there is no Cervine Institute. They're actually just stone cold creamery people. Beth says that, but what about the top deer surgeon? And Jerry replies, I'm looking at her.
Aww.
Aww. Cuero, wey. Qué bonito.
And she says she only needs 5 minutes. And there's a brief montage of her doing surgery and sewing up the deer. And then the deer just gets up and leaps off the table, light as a feather, and is greeted in the woods by a Native American who pets it. And they walk off together, which is incredibly racist. But I think
Oh my God.
But it's funny because it's lampooning a trope, not seriously trying to pull off the trope, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I feel obligated to tell a story about that trope from my college years.
Okay. Let's
so hear the, it. There was the show that we did. I believe it was called Turtle Island Blues, which is should be a full cast of Native Americans. Well, we didn't have any Native Americans in our theater program. And so, you know, we just cast it with all white kids, maybe even some black people. I don't remember, but I wasn't in it. I just remember we also, or the director brought in a local tribe of Native Americans to do a review of the show and basically to tell us whether they thought it was racist or not.
Oh, God.
Surprise. They thought it was incredibly racist.
Oh, my God.
And they hated it. They hated everything about it. And they were just stone cold pissed about being there the whole time. You could see it in their faces. I chatted with one of them. We had like a meet and greet with crackers and cheese.
Okay.
Out in the lobby afterwards, and I was chatting with one of them, and he told me about the script that he had written, where it basically flips the script on every movie that's ever had a Native American in it. So this is about a normal town full of people, full of Native Americans, and they have their one white guy who works in the garage, and he worships cars, and he smokes the tailpipe of the car. And I'm like, whoa, buddy, that's a bit far, don't you think? And he's like, oh, are you offended by that? All right. I see what you did there. Okay. And because I was trying to argue that, no, I think there's plenty of instances where as long as you portray Native Americans in a way that seems
it's
accurate,
like authentic,
authentic, then that's not racist. Like, what about Chakotay from Voyager, Star Trek Voyager? And he's like, yeah, I'm familiar with Star Trek Voyager, and that still does exactly everything that we have a problem with. It's like, it's dragging up their past. Why can't he just be portrayed as a normal ass person? Why are you casting this Native, or why are you writing this Native American character so that you can just drag up Native American past? It's tokenism. And it's bad. Don't do it. And so that's exactly what they're doing in this episode with that Native American character. And the only reason it's not super incredibly racist and only slightly racist is because they're doing it to lampoon that trope. They're not actually just doing it and going, what? That's not racist. Accurate. Accuracy isn't racist. Like, get over it. You don't know what accuracy is, guys. Anyway, that's a fun story.
I believe Bird Person can arrange that.
Go have some fun out there, Bird Person.
It's unwise of me to share these details, but I've become inebriated. They are designed to attract the attention of the female.
It's working.
In bird culture, this is considered a dick move.
And so, yeah, Cold Stone Creamery must have paid some kind of money for this. I think this is great advertisement. Beth's all like, this is the most romantic weekend ever. And Jerry's like, thanks to Cold Stone Creamery.
And then the guy's like, you're welcome.
It was kind of dumb, but whatever. It works. It works.
Yeah.
I liked
it. And then cut to Morty, Summer, and Rick. Wait, what?
Rick thinks Rick has fixed all the collars, or so he thinks. They all put them on, but only Summers turns green and she disappears back to
the normal
timeline.
Yeah, and Rick and Morty are left there and they're like, what the fuck? And it turns out that one version of the Morty's collar, the latch is broken. He can't put it on, it wouldn't latch close. Rick is like, just put it on, it's a latch, like it's not as complicated. And Rick and Morty's like, it's fucking broken. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And then Rick is like, all right, bring it over. Let me fix it. And as Morty takes a step towards Rick, there's a chunk of the floor that just like falls off into space. Yeah,
the whole
place
is just crumbling beneath them and around them and falling apart.
And then Morty ends up falling through the hole and like just falling into space. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. We don't want that.
No, that's bad. And that's then Rick dives through the hole after him. And now finally he wants to fix Morty's collar. Morty, give me your collar. I'll fix it. And he's feeling guilty for yelling at him a moment ago. But Morty's lost the collar. So Rick puts his collar on Morty, sending him back and stranding himself floating around in the abyss. And he gets all emotional. He's like, be good, Morty. Be better than me. I'm okay with this. But such an intense little moment, you know, getting to see Rick be like this. And there's a word for it, and I've been searching for it all afternoon and I can't find it. It's not irreverent. It's kind of the opposite of irreverent, you know, because irreverent means disrespectful. I don't know. Anyway, it's like that.
He's accepting his fate. Like, he's like just accepting that he's about to cease maudlin. To exist or whatever.
He gets all maudlin.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is generally meant in kind of a mocking or a bad way. But I like it. I watch MASH all the time. Boy, do they go maudlin all the time on MASH. But then the collar floats into view and he's suddenly not okay with this. And he starts to pray, please, God, oh, please hear my prayers. And we cut back to another timeline where the rest of him are praying. Still in the garage. And he's like, please, God, if there's a hell, be merciful to me. And the collar works, bringing him back to normal time. And he's like, yes, there is no God in your face.
Fuck you, God. Not today, bitch.
Exactly. And they all celebrate that there's only one dot now. And they do the cabbage dance, the whitest possible thing they could do. And Summer wants to know why they took so long to get back, longer than her. And Morty recalls that I've got a lot of different memories to sort through, but it seems like one of them, Rick, sacrificed himself for me. So Rick avoids any kind of caring, affectionate moment by calling Morty a little piece of shit. But you can hear the love in his voice as he does. It's almost touching.
Yeah, almost.
Almost, yeah.
Almost.
I'm saving you with my verbal abuse. Hooray!
Yeah, hey.
We did it. Yeah. What's the takeaway there? I don't know.
And then Beth and Jerry are back, and Morty and Summer rush to hug them. But Jerry pushes them away because he notices the collars on them, and he starts making fun of them, all of them, basically bullying them to their face. And Beth just stands there laughing her ass off. But Jerry just has like all of these...
A whole string of insults. Like... He needs to be a roast comedian.
One after another. Yeah, he's just roasting them.
When Jerry is on, Jerry is on.
It's on.
Like, I think he's just got ADHD or something, because he's not always stupid. And, you know, people say everybody's a genius in their own way. And sometimes I think that's true. There's some people that I'm like, no, there's nothing that person is a genius about. But... In Jerry's case, he seems dumb and is simplistic and into stupid things, but sometimes he's got some funny shit. And obviously, you know, he's not a real person. And so it's just smart people writing a dumb character. But
and he keeps going, trashing their colors, making fun of them. There's like a zoom out take shot of like the garage. We keep hearing him. But then we see the neighbor across the street that have the Mr. Benson
had
fallen off the ladder. He seems to now be paralyzed because he's like in a wheelchair thing, and there's like somebody visiting him and like giving him like a bouquet of flowers, brought him like some flowers, and it's like, I like the, you know, the continuity of that.
Yeah, brings it back around full circle.
Yeah,
and
full
also
circle.
We get another clear shot of the line of the seam around the house. Mr. Benson's lucky to be alive, honestly. I mean, I know a guy who died just from falling off of an 8-foot ladder, and I'm sure he wasn't standing on the very top of it.
Oh, shit.
Like, he broke his neck. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. That sucks.
Uh-huh. But, all Jerry's insults are on point. Cut to the end credits.
End credits, beesh.
And then we get the tag scene where...
please tell us about
we get another testicle monster, which also happens to be voiced by Peel.
Oh.
Of, you know... I forget his full name, but of Key and Peele. So now we got the team back together. Peele joins in as they look for Rick, and they scrub through time in their bubble, but he can't remember when exactly, and he stops them as they speed past Einstein, and he's like, there, that's him! And we see a dude in a white lab coat with wonky gray hair. Turns out it's Einstein, and they kick the shit out of him. And like, do not fuck with time! And then they just fuck off. And poor Einstein just pulls himself back up slowly and in pain. And he's like, I will mess with time. I will mess with time, as he writes E equals MC squared on the board. On the chalkboard. It's fucking impressive.
Wow.
It's canon.
Because he had similar hair to Rick, he got bitten up by testicle time monster. Yeah.
That's the important part.
Poor Einstein. Mm-hmm. But, and then that's it.
Yeah, and that's that. So let's chat fan theories briefly.
Wait! Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee!
Yeah, that. So, fan theories. I mentioned it a couple times throughout the episode. Just wanted to reiterate, there are some fan theories based on the idea that any episode that shows an establishing shot of the Smith house that doesn't have the outline around the house where it was taken into the other universe in the last episode, those episodes are following a different Rick and Morty. They are not canonically following C-137 and Morty Prime. But we haven't gotten to that yet, so just be aware that that is going to happen in the future, probably, I think. The main one that I want to talk about is ice cream theory.
Okay.
Ice cream.
Wait, I think I've heard of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple, really. The theory is just that ice cream is Rick and Morty's, you know, the universe of Rick and Morty. It's answer to life, the universe, and everything. The key to happiness. And there are several key points up to this episode that help illustrate that idea. Starting in episode 3, I think it was, with Anatomy Park, where Dr. Zenon Bloom is eating. He's got all these buckets of ice cream out, and they're all sitting in the theater, and he's just eating a bunch of ice cream because they're all thinking, well, we might die because the park is falling apart, Ruben is dying, etc. And personally, I don't read too much into that because that's just a necessary reference to Jurassic Park. Like the rest of the episode was obviously very much based on the plot of Jurassic Park, and that's what John Hammond did when the power went out because it was all melting is his reasoning for having all these buckets of ice cream. And then him and Dr. Sattler share a moment of understanding over the ethics and greed of creating this park while they're both eating melty ice cream. And that's the way you want to eat it. I like to let my ice cream melt a little bit before I eat it. So that's how you do it. But also, Beyond that, episode 9, Something Wicked This Way Comes, where Summer and Rick beat up a schoolyard bully. It's in the tag scene at the end. They beat up this bully who knocks over a kid's ice cream cone.
Yes.
And this indicates that ice cream is a sacred food in Rick and Morty universe that is robbing, and that robbing someone of enjoying it is pretty much a crime.
Okay.
Or at the very least, frowned upon.
Yeah.
By people who are on steroids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in this episode, obviously, Jerry tips $460 to Cold Stone Creamery and also hires the company to impersonate wildlife rangers in order to protect his wife's ego and save a deer's life. So maybe he saved that deer's life because of the magic of ice cream in this universe.
The magic of ice cream. Okay.
And then we haven't gotten there yet, but I'm going to throw it in here anyway. The end of season two. Rick leaving Morty behind to go to the Gloppy Drop system to get some ice cream. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, if you go where there's a bunch of ice cream and then you don't come back, you haven't actually gotten ice cream. You've just gone where ice cream is. So essentially going to where ice cream exists means going someplace safe and worth living, proving that life in the Rick and Morty universe just isn't worth it without ice cream. That's ice cream theory. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. There's another significant ice cream appearance in later.
I think there's also the episode where...
In season six, I think.
Well before that. The one where they go into the recursive universes within the car battery to get them to keep stomping on the Beeble boxes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole reason that they were in that universe was to get ice cream.
Okay.
When the battery died.
Well, the one on season six is from the episode where Beth and Space Beth get together. Remember? Mm. Did you see that one?
I've seen it, yeah, but I need to do a big rewatch of seasons 4 through 7.
Essentially, Beth uses the excuse of, oh, I'm gonna go for ice cream to like go fuck Space Beth, and then they come back. And they're like, oh, shit, we forgot the ice cream. Oh, ha, 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 ha. Like, okay.
Oops. We were fucking. good for them.
So interesting. Okay. Yeah. Ice cream. I like it.
Yeah. Then I got a couple more that I just want to throw out there real quick, and then I'll be done. An easy one to chat about real quick, because by now it's disproven by season 7, is the idea that Rick doesn't like time travel because he's afraid that it wasn't another dimension Rick that killed Diane, but maybe it was himself from the future, and he needs to avoid time travel just in case that were to come to pass. But that's bullshit. We know now, and definitely not the case. But this episode is part of mounting evidence that although Rick doesn't like the idea of time travel, it is certainly possible in the canon of the show. As if the literally shelved box of time travel stuff in the garage wasn't enough evidence of that. There you go. But I mean, the time testicle monsters, the time traveling snakes that you mentioned earlier, more than enough evidence in the show that time travel does exist. They just make it clear that Rick doesn't want to fuck with it at all, which I personally think is an allegory for Dan Harmon wanting to dick around with writing time travel because it's a shit show.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm. Even Back to the Future is a shit show. I can't tell you how off the top of my head, but I've heard people lay it out for me. And it's like, oh, so that's all completely implausible and just immediately violates all the laws of causality. So, all right, whatever. Never mind. You're saying Back to the Future is bullshit? Ah, but it's still a great story. It's a great story either way. Just because it's completely impossible. Like, so what? Like, we didn't know that anyway.
It's still fun.
And last but not least, one more thing here. I'm not sure I even want to bring it up, but when this little half-assed theory that I came up with about this episode, or it's really more of a plot hole. I'm just poking a plot hole, and I don't know where to go with it. I don't have a logical conclusion for this. I just have problems. I got no answers, but I got lots of problems. So he stops time for 6 months, right? Rick does.
Right.
So does that stop time across the multiverse? or just the C-131 universe that they are currently in? If so, if it only stops it in C-131, any universe where this didn't happen would be 6 months out of sync.
Ahead, yeah.
Which would greatly lessen the size of the finite curve, it seems like, or at least cause lots of problems.
And
yeah, because I keep thinking back to when Rick and Morty step into the roles of the Rick and Morty that had just died in the garage back in episode 5 or 6 or whatever it was in season 1. Everything seems all nice and synced up most of the time, you know, when they see, when they look into other universes, like through the goggles or whatever.
Yeah.
But it really seems like stepping in there and taking those roles would really fuck everything up so hard from the way that things would have gone otherwise. I don't know. It just seems like it would throw a lot of things out of whack. But I mean, we get plenty of examples of other universes where things are incredibly fucked up and everybody's a fascist and things aren't synced up. So I don't know. It's all part of the multiverse thing where anything that can happen does happen.
Does happen.
And it's just in a different timeline somewhere. It's impossible to see every possibility. Unless you're the time testicle monster.
Unless you're him.
Yeah. But that would take infinity time to do. And that's actually, it would take double infinity time to do that because it needs to happen first. And then you also have to observe it happening. But does that happen concurrently? I don't know. I don't understand quantum physics, which means I understand quantum physics. So we are going to put that on our resumes.
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think after this episode, they never ever try to touch time shit ever again, right?
Well, besides the snakes.
The snakes.
Yeah, other than that, I'm not sure that Rick and Morty ever directly fuck with time. Einstein, who can say?
Who can say? He will mess with time.
I will mess with time.
I will. He's like crying.
I know, I felt so bad for him.
I know.
Have you ever been punched? That shit hurts.
I know, yes. I've been punched by the floor when I fell and hit my head.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, I do practice Krav Maga and we do some sparring, and I've been training to receive punches so I don't freak out if I ever do receive a punch. Like, I have to, like, get used to being punched, essentially.
So. For what? Why?
Krav Maga.
Oh, is that like a martial art?
It's Israeli self-defense.
Cool.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I do. I train for that. Don't worry, I'm a white belt at the moment, but I actually should be a yellow belt, but I missed the day where we did the exams, so now I have to wait until next time. But I sort of know how to fight, and there are days when our coach is like, okay, we're doing sparring, and when you're like sparring with somebody else, you have to take the punches. Like, you can't like shy away. Like, my instinct is to like go away, but he's like, no, you have to take them. You have to take them and feel it so that you get used to that. And if you're in a situation in real life where you're in a fight or somebody's attacking you, you can get through the punches and like attack back and defend yourself, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's not fun though. I'm still scared.
Yeah. It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I started to do just a little bit of martial arts training, and the guy, he was ex-military. He started off with, we're just going to slap each other here really hard just to get an idea, just a taste of the kind of pain you need to expect if you ever get in a real fight. And it wasn't fun.
No.
It was very painful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I have an idea of the pain, and that's why I want to get good at fighting, is so I don't ever have to feel that pain again. But that's not how that works. You're not going to avoid feeling the pain. You just might have a little more power over the situation, you know?
Yeah.
You're probably still going to get hit. So maybe you can control where you get hit and maybe also land some hits on them so that you're not in, so that they run away instead of you just being a powerless ball of fetal position and them having all the power over you. Anyway, it's a bit of a tangent, but I think it makes up for our lack of anything to talk about at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, we went into the episode really quickly on this one. I think the quickest that we've ever done.
That's okay. I think we got a good timestamp on this episode.
So if you want to send us an email with any comments, questions, concerns, you can write us at wubbalubbapodpod@gmail.com. Our Instagram is at wubbalubbapodpod. Our Twitter is at wubbapodpod. We do have a TikTok at wubbalubbapodpod. We have Threads. Wubbalubbapodpod. And we have twitch.tv/wubbalubbapodpod. And we do have a Patreon at patreon.com/wubbalubbapodpod. That's for you if you want to support us financially. And on our Patreon, we have three tiers. The first tier is for $1 a month, you'd be a Morty. And you would get early access to video versions of the podcast. You get a live stream reminder. And that's it. And our love. Our unconditional love.
Lots of it.
For the next tier, for $3 a month, you get to be a Rick. And you get all the previous things. Early access to video versions of the podcast. Live stream reminder. But you also get 10% off the merch. We do have merch. At beerwithbuffy.com/shop.
Yep.
Okay. Yes. And then the third tier that we offer, you get to be the Rickest Rick for $5 a month, and you get all the previous stuff. Plus, instead of 10% off the merch, you get 15% off. And you also get a Rick and Morty smartphone background created by yours truly, me, Alex, because I do some art sometimes.
Glorious.
Hey, did I miss anything?
No, I love it. I think you got it. This is fantastic. I'm happy to be a part of this.
Yay!
This has been Wubble Lubble Pod Pod. I'm Josh.
I'm Alex. It's a good show.
It's a good show. Oh, yeah, we forgot to do that earlier. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's because I want to know when they stop doing it, because they don't do it all. They stop.
I didn't realize.
You have a sacred birthright. You were chosen to destroy vampires, not to wave pom-poms at people.
Why can't you people just leave me alone?
What have we done? Why are we watching this?